Boot Broadcasting, its staff, or advertisers. It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Good morning. We're Rahel and Sonia. Are you there?
Yes.
And Boker Tov. And this is Israel is Real, from the Free Voice for Israel. Boker Tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoharim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. We're also on paltalknewsnetwork.com. If you want to see us and have some interaction, you can email us. You know, it's a chat room. So go to the chat room, which is called Absolute Broadcasting. That's at paltalknewsnetwork.com. And also, as always, we ask for you to consider making a donation to keep us on the air so that we can bring you this wonderful quality programming all about Israel. And to find out how to do that, you can visit us at our website at www.israelisraelnh.com, israelisraelnewhampshire.com. And you can email us at israelisrael1590@gmail.com, israelisrael1590@gmail.com. And the best thing to do, of course, is to write a check out to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. That's write it to and send it to Absolute Broadcast. I'm doing well today. Absolute Broadcasting at Post Office Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. And Sonia.
Yes.
Sonia is not feeling well today. She's speaking to us from her home, which sounds like you're actually in Israel at this point. How are you?
I'm speaking with you. I think that I will survive. It's okay.
Good. I hope you're going to survive and we're going to see you here again.
Oh, I just get a cold. That's it. Nothing special, but I cannot get out from home because... However, how are you?
Oh, you know, it's morning. Early morning. Yeah, okay. Well, it's probably, I think you're just suffering from a hangover from your couple of weeks in Israel. I think you're, you know, time change, climate change. It was probably hot over there, wasn't it, when you were there?
It was actually very hot. And I think that it's the jet lag that broke me up. When I came back, it was extremely cold. So I was in shock, you know. I was in sandals all day long in Israel. when I come back, I need to put everything again. It's winter, you know. But you are not realizing that it's winter when 2 days ago you have been out and everything was warm and everything was green. So
yeah,
this is the thing. Yeah, the sea is beautiful and... you know, but after we came back, Karen and myself, they start having a huge storm. So Israel gets some rain, but also
Baruch
a huge
Hashem.
Storm with the trees falling. And I said, oh.
Yeah, I read that there was first the rain. And then 100-mile-an-hour winds that knocked down even some people.
Yeah, 100 mile an hour. No, it was 100 kilometer per hour, which is less than 100 miles per hour. But the thing is that I remember 120 kilometer per hour, and this is enough, believe me.
Yeah. And yeah, and then snow. They've gotten snow where we haven't even seen, you know, more than a few flakes here.
Well, look, the Golan Heights needs snow because people are going to ski there.
Of course.
You cannot allow December without having some snow.
I know. The people here are waiting for it. They're saying, where is the snow? I said, go to Israel.
Exactly.
It already snowed there. They're already skiing. Even in Jerusalem, I heard they had some snow.
Oh, I didn't know about Jerusalem, but about the north, I know like that snow have falling there.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so...
So I urge everybody who loves to ski, now is the time to go to Israel. So, Sonia, would you like to tell us about our Hebrew word today?
You said that I should change the Hebrew word.
Well, or add to it, extend it, expand on it.
You said that I should speak about Ish, because the last time I spoke about Isha.
Right, right.
So, again, Ish, in my mind, it's somehow close to ash, to fire. And I think that this is the fire of life. God gave the life for Ish and Isha. God gave the life to man and woman. And it's not only life. It's not only, a schematic meaning. It has something to do with the capacity that we have to stay curious, to look around, to try to invent, to try to develop ideas and things, and to make beautiful things around us. I think that this is the fire of life. This is the real fire of life. To stay permanently aware and permanently curious about what's going around, to have your little laugh with your friends, to stay with a little bit of humor. This is the meaning of life. And Dr. Kedar is going to speak about relation between Ish v'Isha, between men and women, in a certain way of angle. He starts actually the last week, and this right. week he will continue.
Right, and so it's important that we talk about the relationship between Ish and Isha and how together they create fire. It's different.
A good fire, right. A very, very harsh fire. But I think that... it's exactly what I said that about curiosity. Dr. Kedar learned and studied the Islam and the culture of Islam. And I think that what we like the most is the way that he is looking to the Islam. He is looking with eyes of an expert. He is not looking from up to down, but he's looking from an equal to an equal. And I think that this is the beauty of his way, giving a lecture or speaking or, teaching. This is what I like the most, the way that he is looking to the Islam.
His perspective on it.
Exactly.
Fair.
Respectful mm-hmm. way of seeing the Islam, but in the same way, he is capable to show things that we, the Western, are incapable because we don't know. We just don't know. It's not... you need to know the language, you need to read the literature, you need to hear the music in order to be capable to understand a culture.
Right, and you need to spend time with the culture.
You need to speak with the people around. Mm-hmm. And exactly, that's it. You need to spend a lot of time in order to be capable to understand a culture and not to see the culture inferior to you or superior to you, but just to see the culture.
And this he really does.
Yes, and this capability that he has, it's something that inspires us. And yes, it's Dr. Kedar, which in a few moments will come back to our stage.
Right. I want to tell our listeners just a little bit about Dr. Kedar, because if they're just tuning in now, we're going to hear the second part of a pre-recorded interview that was begun last week. And if you haven't heard it, you can go on our website at israelisrealnh.com to pick it up in our archives. And do visit there, because there's a lot of great interviews, including more with Dr. Kedar speaking on subjects of Islam. I also want to let our people know that we have a date, January 16th. Dr. Kedar will be coming to New Hampshire to speak in Portsmouth, and maybe some other places. We'll keep you updated on that. So please keep abreast of that. January 16th, mark that today. He'll be in Portsmouth around 2 o'clock, I think, in the afternoon in Temple Israel. And we hope that he'll be speaking to other places. So just before we cut into the interview, Dr. Kedar, Mordechai Kedar, is a lecturer in the Department of Arabic and a research associate at BESA, the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies at Bar-Ilan University. As Sonia said, he teaches Islam, Islamic movements, Islamic ideologies, mass media in the Arab world, state and society in the Arab world, and gender issues in Islamic societies. He's an expert on Islamic culture. He speaks the language. He's spent time with the people. And he's just an excellent, excellent spokesperson about Islamic culture. So we are going to hear now part two, the last part of the pre-recorded interview with Dr. Mordechai Kedar. And thank you, Sonia. We'll speak to you soon. Feel
care.
Better.
Bye.
Tibria.
Bye, Tada.
Bye. Shalom, Boker Tov, Dr. Kedar. How are you today?
Nice.
We're
the
so
sun
glad.
Sun is shining.
The
weather is almost summer. And people are afraid that we're going to have another year of drought here in Israel. But we hope for the best.
Well, amen. we're very happy to have you again, as always.
And Bruchim Abayim.
Yes, Bruchim.
My pleasure and honor.
It seems that the Western way of life really encroaches, from an Islamic point of view, really encroaches on the entire lifestyle of Muslims.
I'll tell you, what happens is, not only this, if you go in the desert, in Saudi Arabia, in Libya, in Algeria, you see tents of those Bedouins who live in the desert. But if you go closer to those tents, you can very easily see a satellite dish standing on the floor to intercept the wonders of the world. They usually intercept a European a satellite named Hotbird, which has like 700 channels of news, of history, of sports, of course, music, arts, fashion, and there are some channels, some dozens of channels, without fashion, without any fashion. One channel of the blondes, one channel of the blonde, one a channel of the brunettes, one channel of the tall ones, and one channel of the lower ones. And they don't need translation for those channels. Hmm. So if they have the choice between watching CNN or Fox, not understanding even one word, or watching those non-fashion channels, what do you think they prefer? So they watch those wonders of the West, cursing the West, but they watch it, especially during the night when the kids are asleep. And this is what happens in those tents. So they consume the Western culture, yet curse it. Definitely.
Well, I'm curious to know in today's modern world, in other words, so technology and all of this global kind of interaction and connection is really a threat to the Islamic way of life. But how do now we have women becoming a little bit more modernized, for example, women who live in America, Muslim women. And I mean, how this is all going on still today, what you're describing.
Definitely. In every society, women were always the avant-garde for changes in society, because women always rebel against discrimination, against marginalization, while men would usually like to preserve the laws, because those traditions or those laws of society are usually in favor of men. And when the laws are more in favor of men, women are more willing to break the boundaries around them. This is why Arab women, Muslim women, are well known. And if you know figures like Nawal al-Sa'dawi, who was Egyptian doctor, who preached day and night against female genital mutilation, which is rather customary in Egypt, in Sudan, and in other Islamic and not Islamic as well states, usually in Africa. She vociferously fought against this phenomenon. In Egypt, she had limited success. In other states, much less. So now women are more aware, usually because of the internet and because of the radio and TV. Now they are more aware of the rights. They know that lifestyle of women can be different, that women can study, women can go out from home to work, women can be autonomous, women can choose her spouse without any pressure from parents or uncles. Women can decide whether she wants to be pregnant or not. Women can choose her lifestyle. Women can wear things which will flatter to her figure. Who doesn't want it? Okay, so since they learn from the mass media and from the internet, especially today, all these messages, this creates a struggle in the heart of every woman. What am I? Am I traditional or am I modern? What do I like better? To look covered without any shape, or to look nicely with clothes which will enhance my shape? Just to give you the example, women who are wearing the jilbab, the gown of the Muslim women, are usually not allowed to put belts on, because when you don't have 60, you don't have 90. This is in centimeters. I don't know how much is in inches. Mm-hmm. Okay, when you don't show the waist, so the breasts and the thighs are also not enhanced, not shown. So they are not allowed even to go around with belts. So this is actually what the rules of the hijab are. So again, they are ordered to hide their figure. And I do suspect that there are some women over there who would like to be proud of what Mother Nature gave them, if not also God himself.
I would imagine now that the world is more accessible to them, that they are probably interested in being more modern.
Definitely. I have, since I write in Arabic, women in the Arab world corresponding to me by email. They find my email in all kinds of articles which I write in Arabic, and they correspond with me only to share with me their agonies. You know, battered wives in the Arab world is a very, very large phenomenon. First of all, it's allowed by the Quran. Quran allows the man to beat his wife. Of course, the scholars of Islam, reduced it, and they allow him only to hit her, not causing any damage, and not in visible places, and only to educate her, not to take revenge. And they, of course, reduced this. But the Quran allows the man to beat his wife. So they share with me their agonies, being wives or women in the Arab world. And unfortunately, with the stories which I get are very, very sad, of a sister who are abused by their brothers, and they keep quiet because if they open the mouth, they will be killed because they bring shame on the family. So they feel that they are the shame, and they feel that they are the problem rather than the victim. They victimize themselves by being targeted by the brothers or fathers or uncles or grandfathers. And this is a very well-known phenomenon in these societies. And the silence which is imposed on them is much more than a great cry. So, actually, to be a woman in these traditional societies, of Islamic societies, Arab societies, is not such a big pleasure, especially when those women know that there is an alternative, there is another way how to be a woman respected with rights, with equality, as it is in Western society. This infiltration of Western values into Islamic societies creates resentment against the West, creates anger, and in the end of the day, creates terror as well. Because even if 1,000 Muslims would go out to jihad against the West, because of this behavior of the West, this permissiveness which infiltrates those Arab and Islamic societies, if only 1,000, you have already more than 1,000,000 jihadists, because the number of Muslims in the world today is some 1,400,000,000. So if only 1,000 will be a jihadist, you already have more than 1,000,000 jihadists in the world.
Bringing it into the modern Western woman who is very, you know, has been liberated for some time now, still with much more to go, but the feminist sort of liberal woman of the West is, on the one hand, eager to help the oppressed women and to educate them and to teach them to be more independent, yet at the same time embracing the whole notion of Islam, which is oppressing them. And you see Western women putting on, you know, shawls and covering themselves and things like this willingly. How do you explain this?
Very easily. Those feminists, or radical feminists, who identify with Islam are actually against the Western system, against the rule of men in the Western societies. So whoever is against Western society is their friend. And since they feel the resentment towards Western societies within Islamic societies, they, for them it's very easy to get attached to these Islamic societies because they share the same resentment against the rule of men in Western societies. This is what combines today the radical feminism and radical Islamism.
I would like only to make a little observation here. First one is that these radical feminists are actually cutting the branch which they are sitting on, means the civilization, the modern civilization, because if, God forbid, we will go back directly into, in the darkness, and it will be for everyone.
Not in their view.
Well,
look, let me give you a good example. Many Algerians are moving, whether legally or illegally, to France, as you know. They speak French and they like to be in France. In their mindset, they don't move from Algeria to France. In their mindset, they move Algeria to France. Means they are willing to live in Islamic Algerian societies, yet on French soil. Because Algeria, as you know, is the Sahara. Yeah. It's a very, very dry desert. And France is much more fertile and green and nice with water. So why living in the desert when we can move Algeria to France? And this is what happens these days. They are moving to take the lands when the Western societies will commit mass suicide by not bringing kids to the world. And as you know, most Western societies, their birth rate is less than 2%. And 2% is the percentage of growth which actually keeps society alive. Less than it, every year you have less people. Because if you take in account those people who pass away and those kids who are being born, less than 2% means that kids born are less, the number of them is less than old men pass away. In a way or another, like in 50 years, 70 years, Western society, especially in Europe, will remain in conservatories only.
Yes.
So Muslims already sense it. Look, already today, in France, for example, more Muslim kids are being born annually than Christian kids, already today. So imagine what will be the face of France in 20 years when they all will be 20 years old.
Hi, we're back on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You've been listening to Dr. Mordechai Kedar speaking about women in Islam and a little bit about Islam. As we mentioned, he will be here on January 16th in New Hampshire, in Portsmouth, and we will let you know all the details about that. So please, please mark your calendars and come to hear Dr. Kedar live. It's really going to be exciting. And I want to mention a few of our sponsors. The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main and Associates, a law firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialist at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or on the web at vernmaine.com, vernmaine.com, vernmaine.com. Another sponsor is Vision. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's email alerts and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, visit Vision's website at www.nh4israel.org. That's NH, the number 4, Israel.org, nh4israel.org. And our final sponsor is Rachel Music. Rachel is spreading beautiful music across the globe. To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for you live, go to www.rachelmusic.net, R-A-H-E-L music.net, rachelmusic.net.
ловимо ту, а живе ту Америка, ватил на хакку субулюка, айюха рабу иляху лпали. Ловимо ту, а живе ту Америка.
We're WSMN 1590, Nashville's News and Talk, and you're listening to Israel Is Real, the voice for Israel, the free voice for Israel. We've been listening just now to a very nice selection of songs by from Israel, Musicians for Peace. The name of the CD is Ruach, Wind or Spirit. And we listened to Lo Yisagoy, which is very appropriate. Nations should not war against each other. And another song called Magnificent. This is a Arab-Israeli mixed group. So New Life Community, Musicians for Peace. And I just want to remind everybody that there was a terrible fire in Israel. It started on December 2nd and it went for 4 days. It spread over the whole Carmel mountain range, which is near Haifa. It's also our sister city, which is a sister city of New Hampshire, the Jewish of New Hampshire. And killed 43 people. 17,000 people were evacuated from their homes, and it spread over 12,500 acres of natural woodlands and planted forests, and killed animals. And the total damage is estimated to be about $75 million. And this is a terrible tragedy. So right now, Israel is rebuilding. In all ways, the forests, the houses, the homes, the zoos. And one way you can help is by contributing to the JNF, the Jewish National Fund, to help rebuild, the plant trees and buy new equipment and all sorts of things. So this is forest rehabilitation for the Carmel Forest. If you can go to that by going to www.jnf.org, JewishNationalFund.org, jnf.org/CarmelRenewal, CarmelRenewal, jnf.org/CarmelRenewal, or just go to jnf.org and you'll find out how to help. All sorts of things are needed, so please do that. Okay, George, are you with me? We're going to give us a little try at a little bit of humor. Oh, all right.
It's like the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah, you're right. And here's Benji. Okay, these are some of the things that Benji Lovett, a stand-up comic and writer in Israel, a new immigrant to Israel, loves about Israel. Are you ready? Okay. I love that you could take a homeless person with no marketable skills, put them behind the counter of Aroma, which is a cafe, and they'd immediately be qualified to make a little foam heart in your cafe, afuch, your cappuccino. Okay, I get the laugh machine on that.
You've
one. Okay,
got me on the floor laughing, Rahel, what can I say?
I know, George. All right, I loved that I visited Dracula's castle in Transylvania. I ran into an Israeli, and within 2 minutes, we both realized that we know someone in common. And that could only be cooler if she were, in fact, a vampire, and her name was Count Shwarmula. Ta-da! I love the magical phrase, Yehyeh Beseder, which is the economic or the bleach of the Hebrew language. It means it'll be okay. Don't worry. Be happy. What can't it handle? A flat tire? A failed test? Take 2 Yehyeh Beseders and call me in the morning. Oy, boy, boy. Okay, I love how the smallest, least professional-looking hummus restaurant serves the best-tasting stuff. Within 7.2 seconds of your placing an order, they've scooped, spread, sprinkled, and created what I like to call beautiful goodness. Mm-hmm. And I love how when it rains, people celebrate like We just won the gold medal in basketball. I also love that when we win a gold medal, we celebrate like a people who take pride in every individual award won by our tiny country. And I love the effectiveness of El Al security. Okay, all together now? If El Al doesn't do it, no one should do it. Sorry, Delta, I'm not taking my pants off. Okay, let's see. We got a few more coming up here. Let's see. I love that this country is roughly the size of a parking spot, yet is one of the most innovative producers of technology on the planet. Boycott us if you'd like, world. Just please return your cell phones. Thanks, okay? And I'd like an iPhone while you're at it. By the way, you know, this guy really lives in Israel, and these are, you know, this is really what it's like there, you know? I love that the cable companies are named for English words, causing the inevitable awkward statement, I'm waiting at home for the hot guy to come.
Brilliant!
Hot, H-O-T, is you know, a cable company. Okay, I love Sakhlab in the winter. And I love laughing when an Israeli turns to his friend and asks the question, Ma, ta dafuk? What are you, nuts? Are you crazy? The answer to that question is absolutely, positively, always yes. Whatever the guy just did, it was definitely dafuk. And I also love that I just saw someone tell their pet Shev, which means sit, which he, of course, did. He's a dog and he knows Hebrew. Between this and the two-year-old who sings Passover songs, does it get any better? I love how people have no qualms about giving you a ride to the airport, even if it's 3 a.m, and their wife is in labor.
You win!
I love the superhuman Israeli hearing, which allows them to pick up the beep, beep, beep of the news, even while someone is using a jackhammer 3 feet away. I know you Israelis out there are laughing. And this is serious. This is a serious one. I love the powerful emotion I feel, and I second that emotion, that I feel during Yom HaZikaron, Remembrance Day siren, which you can only experience in Israel. I love Yom HaAtzma'ut, which is Independence Day, which is apparently Hebrew for go to the park and eat a cow. And I love that I've had this once-in-a-lifetime experience, and it's not over yet. I love that people I know from all over the world are always visiting this place, the center of the Jewish world. And let's see, I love that it's 12:48 in the morning, tomorrow is a work day, and Cafe Aroma is still hopping. How do these people do it? I love that people are so unbelievably hospitable to the degree that my American brain cannot understand. Like when 45,000 people invited me over to a Passover Seder, including a coworker who I'd only known superficially for a few weeks. Yeah. These are things that really happen, you know? I love how someone would slow down during the running of a marathon to say, Bete Avon, which means bon appetit, to the bystander who's eating 100 meters away. I love how a stranger, any stranger at a bus stop, can start talking to you about politics and philosophy and then try to set you up with their niece. All right, George is getting the hang of it. Here we go. Okay, I love Shira Bitzibur, congregating with friends and strangers in a public venue and singing songs that you may have only heard at Jewish summer camp. Let's see. What have we got here? I love that McDonald's is kosher for Passover. And I love that living here makes me feel like I'm contributing to the building of a country. I love how the sample credit card in advertisements doesn't have names like John Doe or Shmuel Ben Tov, but instead it says Israeli Israeli.
I see you have another career, Rahel, in yeah. comedy.
I don't think so. I think I'm bombing here. I don't know. All right, I'll give a few more. Here we go. I love how this country is a kibbutz galuyot, which means that you can watch American football with Argentinians and have them saying things like, I cannot watch this game. This is alimut, violence. And I love the kumkum, which is the electric hot water kettle. And I'm not saying that I brought it into my bathroom to shave because the solar water heater wasn't hot. But, okay, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I love how the painter not only asked me for a coffee before working on my apartment, but how I immediately made it for him without any feelings of weirdness.
Booyah!
And I love hummus for approximately 47,000 different reasons.
Can you believe it?
I love watching the robot beat the tar out of a suspicious object, and that rules. You know, who needs cable? I love that our 80-something-year-old president is hip enough to have his own YouTube channel. Come on, Shimmy, get on J-Date. It says likes winning the Nobel Peace Prize and telling off the Turkish Prime Minister, you know, dislikes disco and hula hoops, things like that. Okay, am I bombing yet? Okay.
By that reaction, I'd say no.
Oh, thank you. All right, I'll keep going. Okay, a few more. Here we go. Remember that hot guy? Well, I love how the hot guy is also a Polish mother offering to park and walk upstairs because he felt bad making me come down to give him my modem. And once again, just because I have a thing for the hot guy, it doesn't mean that and this is Benji talking, remember, it doesn't mean that he's gay. Okay. So I have learned to love sponja, which is the Israeli system that actually cleans floors. As my friend once said, what do you call that thing in America to clean? The stick with the disgusting hairs, you know, is that doesn't clean? It just pushes the dirty water around.
Hello.
All right. Let's see. I'll pick one or two more. I love how people here name their children with intention. In Israel, they say, my daughter's name is Lihi. It means she is to me after her grandmother who perished in the Holocaust. In the U.S., shucks, I call my boy Luke, as in the disciple? Nah, the night he was conceived, his Ma and I were watching the Dukes of Hazzard.
Hoo-ah!
All right. Did I bomb yet?
Nope, not at all. 10 stars.
10 stars? 10 stars? All right. Here's one. I love, and this is true. This is... If this isn't the reason to go to Israel, I love Israeli tour guides and how they'll just grab anything off a tree and start eating it. In Israel, they say, hey, look at Dudu. He just found some naturally growing Louisa. That is so cool. And in the U.S., you'd say, why is that dude eating a plant?
I'll have what he's having.
Where do you find those things?
My bag of tricks over here.
That's why we love you, George.
Thank you.
All right, last one. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is a good one. I'm sure you've all seen the episode of The Simpsons. You all know who The Simpsons are, right? I love that in a recent episode, The Simpsons came to Israel and that the tour guide spoke Hebrew and that I understood it.
I'm doing great.
Okay, I'll stop there while I'm still ahead, right?
That was good.
All right, we got a few minutes, and I'm just going to go a little bit serious here to the Torah portion. I had a short one and a long one. I think I'll go for the long one. Here we go. This week's Torah portion is Vayechi, which is Genesis 47, verse 28 to 50, verse 26. And it's about the blessings of Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Jacob, Yaakov. So Yaakov, realizing that he is about to die, he gathers his 12 sons to receive a blessing. And this is one of the most beautiful customs in Jewish life, is that when parents bless their children at the start of the Friday night Shabbat meal, girls receive the blessing. May God make you like the matriarchs Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Boys, meanwhile, are blessed to be like Ephraim and Manasseh. What happened to the patriarchs Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Why were Ephraim and Manasseh chosen instead as the subjects of this important tradition? The sole reason, or one of the reasons, is that Ephraim and Manasseh represent a break from this pattern of fighting, because most of the brothers were involved with various quarrels and conflicts. This explains why Jacob purposely switched his hands, blessing the younger Ephraim before the older Manasseh. Jacob wished to emphasize the point that with these siblings, there is no rivalry. It's with this thought that parents bless their children today, for there's no greater blessing than peace among brothers. And the words of King David ring true, how good and pleasant it is for brothers to sit peacefully together. Hinei matov umanaim, shevet achim gam yachad. And this is the hope that God holds for all Jewish people and people all over. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who was a 19th century Germany parshan commentator, offers another explanation of why Jewish boys throughout the ages received the blessing of Ephraim and Manasseh. The first generation of Jews, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, raised their children primarily in the land of Israel. The Holy Land is the most hospitable Jewish environment, where the Talmud reports that even the air makes you wise. In one sense, being Jewish in Israel is easy. But due to famine, Jacob and his family all moved to Egypt. The next generation would grow up surrounded by paganism and immorality. The challenge was whether Judaism would survive amidst all the distractions of diaspora life. Throughout the ages, Jewish parents have prayed that their children should be able to withstand the temptations of exile and keep a strong, proud Jewish identity. We struggle with that terribly today, and this is not an easy task. For faced with the reality of the Christmas season, for example, the easy option is to relegate one's Jewish identity to the back burner. And that's why parents must constantly fight the tide by emphasizing Jewish values. The most effective tools are high-impact experiences like Jewish day schools and trips to Israel. So in the end, how does a parent gauge success? Far more than the children, it's the grandchildren who reveal the foundation and the future direction of a family line. So hence the popular saying, the issue is not whether you have Jewish children, it's whether you have Jewish grandchildren. So what was the outcome of Ephraim and Manasseh? Despite great odds, living in the whole Egypt experience, they grew up in Egypt and maintained adherence to Torah ideals and practice, which is why we bless our children to be like them. May we all be blessed with proud Jewish children and grandchildren in our world, and may Israel grow and continue to flourish and survive. I'd like to thank Dr. Mordechai Kedar, as always, being our guest. Again, he'll be here January 16th, so keep your ears open and your eyes open to find out more details about that. So we are, Rachel, and Sonia is at home today sick, but we did hear from her this earlier, and I thank her for waking up and being here with us, even by phone. Israel is Real, our theme song, Hinei Matov, by myself, Rachel. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning. We will be off for the next 2 weeks for the winter break. So we'll be back in January in next year, 2011. This is WSMN Radio, 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. And do find us on the archives, www.israelisrealnh.com.
The Telegraph, keeping you connected to your community for pennies a day.